welcome to episode 191 of the Cricket Her Weekly. We have enjoyed watching some WBBL this week, and we're very much getting to the crunch end of the competition, aren't we, Sid? Now, yeah. You've been looking at the numbers, and I believe you posted this chart on Cricket Her this morning, which shows the order of the teams. Now, we've got two teams who have definitely qualified for finals, so that's Perth Scorchers and the Adelaide Strikers. Unfortunately, at the bottom end, the two teams who are definitely out are the Melbourne Stars and the Melbourne Renegades. Not been a good year if you're from Melbourne. but in the middle, we have four teams. Now, you obviously, your chart documents the kind of percentage chances of qualification. Now, Sydney Thunder, 99% chance of qualification for finals, but it's not 100%. The Brisbane Heat, 95% chance of qualification, but it's not 100%. And the Hurricanes are 4% chance of qualifying, and the Sixers, 2% chance of qualifying, but they can both still qualify, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, both the Thunder and the Heat are in the driving seats. They only need to win one more game each, so they can both afford to lose another game. As long as they win that other game, then they'll definitely be in that knockout stage. And of course, being in the knockout stage is a little bit different these days because, you know, it's all about, can you get straight through to the final? Can you get second place to get into the Terminator or whatever?
And that's all up for grabs.
But that's all still up for grabs. Okay. The Hurricanes definitely still in it. I mean, the Hurricanes and Sixers, there are a few different scenarios, but let's look at Sixers, for example.
Okay.
Charlotte Edwards' team, they need Brisbane Heat to lose their last two games. So their chances don't look great. But Brisbane Heat have lost their previous two games. If they lose the next two games as well, and Sixers win their last two games, then they'll be level on points. Now, there's quite a large net run rate differential between the two. So Sixers would need Heat to lose their games reasonably badly and to win their games reasonably well. But it's not outlandish. So it's not completely ridiculous to suggest that Sixers could still do it.
And
there's
just
a slightly
say,
easier path for Hurricanes as well.
I was just going
to
say about the Sixers that Charlotte Edwards does appear to be an expert at pulling rabbits out of hats with teams that she coaches. So
yeah,
you never know.
It's definitely plausible that Heat could lose those last two games and that Sixers could win theirs and turn that net run rate around. It's even easier for the Hurricanes. Hurricanes have already got one more point thanks to a rained off game earlier in the season. So they could actually catch Sydney Thunder as well. So if they win their last two games, in fact, they could afford to only win one of their last two games as long as the other one was rained off, and they still could qualify.
Okay.
If they win their last two games and Heat lose their last two games, then Hurricanes will definitely be through. So, yeah, that's where we're at.
Ah, interesting. Good to explain the practice behind the theory. Sid never makes up numbers. They're all very scientifically calculated. By a clever computer.
Yeah, okay, that's by a computer, not by me.
But you told the computer what to do, so you are clever.
Yeah.
Good. Glad you agree. It has been a great season for those two teams at the top of the table, the Strikers and the Scorchers, Sid. We would probably expect one of those to take home the title, if we're being honest about kind of current form and everything like that. But who is your money on if you were going to put money down?
Well, I'm not a betting man, as people will know, but I think that I'd go with Strikers on this. The Scorchers are technically top on that. They are top at the moment, they're technically about it. They're top on net run rate, but Strikers have a game in hand over them.
Okay.
And I can just see Strikers coming through. Strikers have been really strong with their bowling. That's been the key to their success this season, I think. Amanda Jade Wellington's been brilliant. Megan Shute's been brilliant. But you know, one figure that we haven't kind of talked about much in the Cricket Her Weekly, Anisa Mashangwe, who's a Zimbabwe player that's moved to Australia a few years ago. She was playing league cricket and was obviously, you know, kind of smashing that. She had previously been an international, and she's played as recently as last year. She's played for Zimbabwe. And she is playing, well, she's in an interesting case actually, because she's playing as a sort of Schrodinger's overseas player. Is she an overseas player or is she not an overseas player? Well,
yeah.
It appears that technically speaking, she's playing as a local player. So there's an article on cricket.com.au by Laura Jolly from last year saying it's just like Kim Garth, except it's not just like Kim Garth, because Kim Garth had to renounce playing for Ireland in order to
play in WBBL
as a local.
Because obviously each team only has three overseas spots, so those are quite precious.
Whereas Mashangwe has not qualified. I mean, sorry, appears to have been given a special dispensation to play as a local player, even though she's still playing for Zimbabwe. So I don't really understand. I mean, it just feels like one of those cases of, you know, to borrow that old cliche from Groucho Marx, these are my rules, and if we don't like them, we'll have others. It's very cricket, isn't it, Raf?
It is very cricket, yeah. And you know, I don't think neither of us are saying that she shouldn't be playing, obviously, especially given that she's resident in Australia, right? So under all normal criteria, she would absolutely qualify as a local player. But the difficulty is that if you make an exception for one person, then you have to change the rules, because otherwise somebody else is going to pop up. And, you know, Kim Garth would not be too happy thinking back, going, well, I had to give up playing for Ireland in order to count as a local player. So why is that rule not being applied uniformly to other players now? So, of course, we want the WBBL to be open and to welcome players who are going to, you know, perform well, as in this example. But we also need rules that reflect that situation. And I suspect what may have happened is that the rules have been kind of copied and pasted over from the men's BBL, and nobody's actually thought, well, hang on, maybe these are a bit too restrictive in a slightly different context of women's cricket.
Yeah, and they've made some strange exceptions. Anyway, that's by the by. She had a fantastic season.
Yeah,
sort of leg spinner that bowls a bit more like an off spinner, really. It's slightly kind of interesting, you know, approach to bowling. But, you know, technically a leg spinner. Well, no, not technically. I mean, she is a leg spinner.
Yeah.
But she's doing a sort of quite off-spinnery job. And landing on line one wide in her first 150 balls in WBBL this season. So that's at least stunning. I mean, a lot of other players are delivering a wide every 20 balls.
For a leggy, especially, that's
amazing.
Yeah,
well, that's why I say in some ways she bowls a bit more like an off-spinner. Yeah. That, you know, she's got that sort of very reliable action that you might expect of an off-spinner, okay, rather than a leg spinner. Anyway, she's had a fantastic season, so awesome for her.
So you're excited about the strikers in the final. I've got to say, Sid, as a long-time Scorchers supporter, only basically because of Sophie Devine, let's be honest, I'm very excited to potentially see them win it this year. And you were talking about the strikers bowling, obviously, for the Scorchers. It's been all about Sophie Devine and Beth Mooney, hasn't it? I mean, just the two of them as an opening partnership, it's like, mwah, chef's
kiss.
Yeah,
no, there's no one to touch them. Well, not quite true, actually, because Shamari Esipatu
is separating them, isn't
so
she?
Beth Mooney's got 550-odd runs, and then Shamari Esipatu's second, and then Sophie Devine is...
Well, if you've got if your two opening batters are in the top three batters, then you're going to have a good year, aren't you? So
yeah,
I think it could be the Scorchers.
Bowling tends to be, you know, bowling tightly is what can win you these final series games. So.
Now, the other question that may come into play here, of course, is the fact that we believe, I think it was actually reported by Crick Info, that the England players are going to miss the final. So they are able to play all of the matches up until the final, as I understand it, but they will miss the final. So let's say the final ends up being the Scorchers v the Strikers. That could potentially make a difference. So for the Scorchers, very loosely speaking, we would be missing Amy Jones and, of course, Nat Siver-Brunt, which is two big misses, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Amy Jones is playing a little bit of a bit part role, but an important bit part role, you know, coming in down the order and smashing some runs at the end.
Quickly.
Can be very useful in
the
final series, definitely.
And what about
of
the
course,
strikers?
Nat Siver. Nat Siver's been back bowling this week as well, interestingly enough. Someone's
England
allowed her
pleased.
To touch a ball.
Wow,
so,
okay. What about the strikers, Sid?
So the strikers will lose Danny Gibson.
Okay.
You know,
he's had a bad season for
her first season over there. They've also got George Adams, but George Adams is not part of any of these England squads, so George Adams would presumably still be there.
Okay.
George Adams hasn't done an awful lot this season.
Yeah,
she's scored something like 10 runs or 20 runs or something. It's hardly, because she's had another chance. She's been coming in down the order. She hasn't bowled a lot either. She's bowled pretty well, I think. When she look at her ball-by-ball numbers, her ball-by-ball numbers bowling are good. But she hasn't been throwing the ball a lot. Mm. She's basically played a load of games as a specialist fielder. And, you know, she's been fielding
she's
in the outfield.
An odd use of one of your very precious overseas slots.
Anyway.
The other player, of course, who's had a brilliant season for WBBL is Lauren Cheetle. And that's a nice segue into the next piece of news that we're going to be talking about, which is that Australia have announced their squad for their forthcoming tour of India in December. And Lauren Cheetle is back, baby. She, of course, burst onto the scene as a 17-year-old in 2016, I think it was. Hasn't played for Australia now since early 2019, I believe. So she's been out for a few seasons, struggling with all kinds of difficult injuries. And there was a cancer scare at one point. Has really kind of been through the mill and has come out the other side now, having a really good domestic season and has been called up on the back of it. So that's brilliant, isn't it, Sid?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, she's been, I think what's important is that she's like, her bowling has really matured and she's like, she's understood now, like, that kind of quick bowling isn't just about bowling quick, it's about bowling smart. And that's been the key to her success. Yeah. And, you know, she's taken some big wickets, she's bowling good balls, she's not just looking to have people, you know, try and smash her out the ground and get them caught on the boundary, you know, and just reward, I think. And I think that she could be a really interesting selection for the test. I mean, you'd imagine that she probably would. They're thinking that she'll play in the test.
Absolutely. You would imagine. Why select her otherwise?
Yeah. I don't think they're going to risk Megan Sheet in the test.
No.
So, you know, and the only other thing is that she's only selected for the test, hasn't she? Mm. So they've explicitly said she's not going to play in the T20s. They're going to send her back. She's going to get the chance to play some WNCL.
Yeah. Makes sense not to have her hanging around. The other thing is, of course, that the test is right before Christmas, and the ODIs and the T20s, I think, are both after Christmas. So if you can send somebody home to have Christmas at home, why would you not, right?
Yeah.
So she's been selected just for the test. Now, it's a bit weird because the only other player who's only been selected for one component of the tour is Grace Harris, who's explicitly been labelled as a T20 player only.
Yeah, I think that just feels slightly odd on the grounds that I assume that she's going to be there for when the test is on, because I would imagine they'll take the entire squad
fly out together, do the acclimatisation together.
So at that point, it's a little bit odd to say so explicitly that she's not selected. I don't know whether there's some contractual thing or possibly.
Well, I wonder if it might be financial.
To try and save money somehow.
Is it a financial thing in the sense of
if you're not part of that squad, you don't get paid a particular
piece of money? Isn't it?
I don't know. It just seemed a bit odd and a bit sort of like with Cheetle, you can go, okay, you're not going to be part of the T20 squad, but you're going back to play WNCL. Yeah. That's positive. Whereas for Grace Harris, it's like, no, you're not good enough to play tests. It just feels a
bit harsh, isn't it?
Well, it's a little bit of shade being thrown on her, it feels like, by the selectors.
Yeah.
But what do I know?
The other interesting thing, which was the thing that jumped out to me immediately when I saw the squad, is that there is no update on the captaincy. So they have announced a rudderless team with there is no captain. And I think that does that matter? Well, it matters from a team perspective, I think, because there's going to be a lot of uncertainty amongst those squad members at the moment, right? There's going to be people who are just a little bit like, oh, what's going on here? Now, we know that there are probably like four or five or even six names in the mix here who are wondering what's happening. Is it possible, like, do they maybe already know, Sid?
Yeah, I think that what we're hearing implies that they do know who the captain
is.
Right, okay. But it has to be ratified by the board of Cricket Australia. There's going to be a board meeting, and at that point they'll officially ratify it, and then they'll be able to announce a new permanent captain. So what we're hearing is that they do know who the next captain is. Whether all the players know, I don't know. But here's the thing. I've seen an awful lot of money go on Annabelle Sutherland in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
I think that the commentators are suddenly going, oh, well, maybe Annabelle Sutherland will be up.
And
the
other thing is that, unfortunately, it looks like Meg Lanning is going to be sitting out the rest of the WBBL, and potentially we're not going to see her play any more high-level cricket.
She's pulled out the last couple of games. And
so Sutherland has been named as the Stars captain in Lanning's
absence.
That's
kind of an interesting one to suddenly throw in.
And that is quite indicative, isn't it? Cricket Australia could easily have put pressure on them and go, we could do with her having a bit of captaincy experience, please.
Yeah, give her these couple of games.
It's interesting because it's not one that we'd particularly talked about in terms of names that we were throwing around. We talked about McGrath, we talked about Gardner, we'd obviously talked about Healy, who's explicitly put her hand up and said, I'd be happy to do it on a kind of full-time basis. But Sutherland wasn't particularly on our radar, but I completely agree with you that I think that it is quite interesting that suddenly her name is being chucked around by people who may well be in a bit more in the know than we are. from our little house 10,000 miles away from where all the action's happening. So that, yeah, that's an interesting one. I mean this ratification by the board in order to announce a captain, it may be just a kind of rubber stamping process, but it just seems a little bit overkill to me. I think it's everything's happened very suddenly, and that's unfortunate for Cricket Australia, but it should have been possible for them to name a captain when they name the squad. I think that's made them look a bit silly, if I'm honest.
Yeah, it's one of those little bits of ancient history that you know, the board has the right to name that permanent captain, and you know, they probably would be endorsed by the Governor General and the King as well, or something, probably, for all I know.
The King, yeah, yeah. King Charles is going to be properly clued up as to who the Australia
King
women's
Charles,
cricket
by his gracious majesty, have decided that Annabel Sutherland shall be forthwith the captain of Australia, brackets women's.
Anyway, they need to crack on with it because the tour is happening quite soon. The other thing that's interesting about these the actual dates of the tour are that India, we talked about playing two tests close together, but they actually are. These two tests are going to be very much back to back. So India v England is 14th to the 17th of December. India v Australia is the 21st to the 24th of December. So there's only 3 days between those two tests, which is an awfully big ask.
They're going to be absolutely cream cracker.
Well, I know that the men do it sometimes, but they play a lot of multi-day cricket. The Indian team do not.
Yeah, they've never done anything comparable before.
I guess
it's 8 days of test cricket in the space of, what is it, sort of 12, 13 days.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that they might go, okay, well, some of the like slightly more fringer players might rest them.
Might have to wind up resting people.
But they're not
resting people
rest,
for a huge test
match.
And the players won't want to be resting.
You can't
either.
Rest like Smriti or Harmanpreet Kaur. Or you know, those kind of your core players, you cannot.
The core players won't want to be rested for that. I mean,
but you're right. They're going to break these players potentially. I think it's really strange scheduling from the BCCI, who I assume have you know okayed this because they're the home board, right? So they come up with the schedule. It's just very odd, and. You know, you on the one hand you go, well, I guess it's an advantage because they've just played a test, so they get accustomed to having played a test, and we have obviously talked about that as having been something that not many women's teams have actually been able to do because tests have been so rare and infrequent, and so you just get into the swing of things and then you're moving on to a different format. But in this case, it just feels like it's a massive disadvantage, and that Australia are just going to walk all over India in that test.
We'll see.
Maybe I'll be eating my hat in a few weeks' time, Sid.
We'll see, or we possibly won't. It's unclear whether we're going to be able to watch these matches in the UK.
Okay.
But fingers crossed.
Yeah, let's see.
I don't know whether we'll be able to cope with two tests in a row. It's going to be hard work for us as well.
Well, we'll have Christmas immediately afterwards to sleep, Sid. So. Yeah. Just sleep on Christmas Day, it's fine.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you everybody for tuning in, and we'll see you in a week's time. Bye for now.
Bye.